Way, way back in 1972, when I was in high school, save the math for later, I read a book for a little economics class, and I read it for extra credit. It was a book called Super Money, and it was by a man whose pseudonym was Adam Smith. The description of the book says this about it. Super money is the money you get when you leverage investment in your business into a publicly traded company and multiply it many times over. And this author said that super currency, what he was calling super currency, is capitalized income, not sheltered income. So the whole premise of the book was that you can make good money in your business, but unless you take that money and invest it in something where it can grow just geometrically, then you don't have that super currency. You just have, you have money, but it's temporary and it's not that much wealth, but that you can multiply it many, many times over if you go take the risk and go for the super currency. Now, this book says that instinctively people know that they're not going to get rich working for a salary, and so his idea was that people drifted, at that time at least, toward the securities market because they know that's where the super currency lives. And then this guy, this really condescending statement, he says, the poor innocents among us still think the green stuff in their wallet is money. And he says, we can all huff and puff and work overtime, but there's no way we can catch up because there is nothing to capitalize our earnings. Now, before I go any further, I want to say I'm speaking metaphorically here. I'm not going to preach to you all about money. I'm going to talk to you about the kind of currency that we spend our time and our energy and our resources and our passion trying to earn. We're talking about currency versus super currency. This huge difference in perspective is the same kind of shift that is talked about, believe it or not, in the story of Jesus being tempted in the desert. Jesus is facing these temptations, and the devil is talking about pocket change, and Jesus is talking about super money. Not literally, of course, but a change, not just in who's winning the game, but a refusal to play the game that the rest of the world is playing. Remember, supercurrency is capitalized income, not sheltered income. In spirituality, as in this Adam Smith idea of currency, we only find freedom when we risk going outside the accepted system. Money and great jobs and great loving human relationships, these are all wonderful things. But none of them lasts. Smith, in his book, said that during a period of time, the number of stockholders went up dramatically instead of those people. They must be looking for something. Maybe they realize that the green stuff in their wallet is not the real money. As people age, don't we all begin to look for something else? Something higher or deeper, something that has more lasting meaning. The short-term gain, metaphorically the green stuff in our wallet, is not what really matters. Some of us find that out sooner and some of us later. But we know that these things that we focus on, that we very often focus on, can't last. Of course, human difficulties are important to us and to God. But we don't follow Jesus because of his human problem-solving ability. We are asked to follow Jesus into another world, another reality, one that takes all the fearsome power out of this life. As human beings, we do live in a painful physical world, in a challenging world. And it may look to us, especially if we're sick or hungry, it may look to us as if one healing or one feeding may looks like redemption and salvation. But if you think about the gospel stories, especially in Mark, but throughout the gospels, very often Jesus would cure someone of something that had plagued them for years. And then he would say, don't tell anyone. I think he said, don't tell anyone, because he didn't want to be known as just a problem solver on the same level that we've continued to operate on. He wanted to see that he isn't just somebody that changes things within the system, that that's not his contribution and his mission, but that his mission is to change systems entirely. The magnitude of that change comes through in the story of Jesus' temptation. The devil said to him, if you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread. Now on the surface you think, well, what's wrong with that? Wouldn't it be great if we could feed all these people by changing stones into bread? And then he said, if you are the Son of God, throw yourself down. And he said, the angels will protect you. And then the devil said, all the kingdoms of their world and their splendor can be yours if you just bow down to me. Now we've come to think of these things as three temptations, but they're really one temptation in three different versions. On the surface, they seem harmless or even productive. Wouldn't it be great if you had enough power to change things? I personally have had very many little selfish prayers when I bought a lottery ticket that said, God, I'd be a really good rich person. I would really give a lot to other people. But I'm trying to fix the temporal instead of shifting into another system. And the danger in these temptations, and the one that we face very often, is that we want to dilute the power of God into nothing more than a way to solve earthly problems. So our prayers are all about having people get well, or whether we get the next job, or all of those things. And those things can be very good, but they're earthly things. For example, if we wanted or had the power to change stones into bread, isn't that a wonderful thing? I suspect, I don't know this for sure, but I suspect worldwide we have, with biotechnology, we have the resources to produce enough food to feed everyone. What needs to change is not our ability to produce, but our willingness to share. Because the next day we're going to need bread again. That need is never going to go away. And Jesus said to the devil, man does not live by bread alone. We need a more lasting transformation, a kind of nourishment that will last. If you think to John's gospel about the woman at the well, she has this encounter with Jesus and he talks about, if you drink this water, you'll never be thirsty again. If you only drink the kind of water that comes from the human well, you'll be thirsty again over and over and over. And doesn't it sound good, this second temptation, to be able to go through human life without being hurt? But still, human life cannot last. Even if you think of someone like Lazarus, who was brought back from the dead, he was not resurrected, he was resuscitated. He just got a longer life at that point. Nothing else changed. Whatever problems he had in his life, he just had them for a longer period of time. Because we were still operating in the same system. God offers us not just resuscitation and a longer life and more of the same. God offers us resurrection, which is to say we don't play that game anymore. We're saved by the grace of God and we don't have to have these worries. Resuscitation is not just, it's just the money changing pockets. It's just, you know, it's the same system, everything's the same, and we just do better temporarily, but it's not a change that lasts. The devil offers Jesus all the kingdoms of the world. Again, this is not really a change in the world, it's simply a change in the identity of the players who are winning. People in that time thought the Messiah was going to throw out the Romans and the people who persecuted the faithful. But that would just mean that the system had turned upside down. It hadn't really changed. Again, as one of the quotes in the book says, in that place, money is simply changing pockets. If suddenly the poor and powerless have status and have economic gain, nothing has really changed except the winners. It's not a better world, it's just a better temporary circumstance for some people. I think this idea of super currency holds truth for us in our spiritual quest. Because solving one problem for one human being on one day doesn't really change the world. It doesn't save us from the world. It resuscitates, but it doesn't resurrect. It gives us more of the same, which we have found through experience doesn't really work. We keep thinking, if I get a better job or a better salary or a better relationship or a better fill in the blank, then everything will be fine. And then you find out that no matter how good those things are, they don't last. Human potential, like human currency, becomes super currency when we cast aside the old system entirely and admit, as this author says of the system, there's no way we can catch up. No way we can save ourselves, no matter how much we work at jobs and relationships and health. My belief is that we don't really want power, ultimately. We want safety. We want to live without fear, and no amount of earthly accomplishment or power can take away the main fear, which is the fear of death. Only resurrection, a power of God entirely outside our current system of currency, can save us from death. It's time to realize in our regular old system, there's no way to catch up. That sounds like really bad news. But the really good news is that we don't have to catch up, because God holds us. God takes care of us. God saves us from the fear and the threat of death. We don't need sheltered income, things that are short-term to solve small earthly problems. We need capitalized income, which means we have to risk so that we stop trying to use more of the same, more of the unsatisfactory, and then we go and risk and find something outside of any system or understanding we could have on our own. The greatest temptation we face, the same one that Jesus faced, is the temptation to think that more fixes anything. The great freedom comes in letting that idea go and putting our faith in a super currency, an entirely new system. Resurrection, not resuscitation. As it turns out, the green stuff in our wallet isn't what really matters. Even Jesus said it. Man does not live by bread alone.